Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. After Jesus' birth in Bethlehem of Judea during the reign of King Herod, astrologers from the east arrived one day in Jerusalem inquiring, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." At this news, King Herod became greatly disturbed, and with him all of Jerusalem. And summoning all of the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem of Judea," they informed him, "here is what the prophet has to say. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the princes of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Herod called the astrologers aside and found out from them the exact time of the star's appearance. And then he sent them to Bethlehem. After having instructed them, "Go and get detailed information about the child. And when you have discovered something, report your findings to me so that I may go and offer him homage also." After their audience with the king, they set out. The star, which they had observed at its rising, went ahead of them until it came to a standstill over the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the place, they found the child with Mary his mother, and they prostrated themselves and did him homage. They opened their coffers and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They received a message in a dream not to return to Herod, and so they went back to their own country by another route. The Gospel of the Lord. It's a great feast day in our tradition, celebrating the Feast of the Epiphany, the arrival of the Magi. And we all know the story, right? And the rest of you? You know it too, right? And for most of us, if I were to ask you to come up and tell the story, if I were to say, okay, come on up and tell the story, Holly, you would get nervous, or Kevin, right? You wouldn't get nervous, but you'd come up and you would tell a version of the story, right? Or anybody else, but we would all have a similar version, right? And it would be something like this. These guys, they saw a star. It appeared all of a sudden. And they were moved by a spirit that directed them to follow this star. And so they followed it, and they arrived in Jerusalem. And then the star wasn't visible for a time period. And they started asking people. They said, "We got a message. There's going to be a new king born. And we're making our way to find him. Do you know where it is?" And they said, "Why don't you ask there at the king's palace?" Those folks, they know everything, right? That's the way government is, right? They know everything, so they can tell you where. And so they arrive there, and a few little surprises, and people say, this is what it says in the scriptures. What an interesting thing. These were the people that knew of the promised Messiah, and now the birth is taking place. It's not one of them to show up. Isn't that amazing? The whole history of their scriptures was about this. That's what the Old Testament or the Hebrew scriptures were about, the preparation for the advent of the Messiah in the world, and now they don't know. And so they ask, where is he to be born? Well, this is what it said. Let me read it to you from the book. In Bethlehem of Judea, For you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, are by no means least among the tribes of Judah, for from you shall come the King, the Savior, the one who is to set his people free. And they said, oh, okay, let's go. And then Herod calls him aside, like, into his little side office and says, hey, go ahead and find out for me all the details so that I too may go and worship. And so they arrived and they celebrated him and they gave him gifts and then they went on home, right? So that's kind of the basics of it, right? Pardon? Right. That's the basics. That's the domesticated version, right? That's the version that we have dressed up and we've come to believe and we think, yeah, that's how it was. I think it was absolutely anything but that. I think it was just like the Joseph and Mary story and the whole birthing of the Christ in our world, an extremely challenging and difficult thing. And these folks are really emblematic of your journey and my journey. We treat them as a very domesticated, pious event. Man, these magi, you know, what were they? They were kings? You don't know? I don't either. Hey, they were magi. It doesn't matter in the heck what they were, but they were three individuals. It was significant that they were three. And they had a mission. Where did they get the mission? Revealed. The star? They follow that star all the way? No, absolutely no. It doesn't say anywhere in the gospel that they follow the star all the way. They saw the star at its rising. That was the introduction. And for them, that would have been significant because astrology at that particular point in time was particularly significant. People loved to. Hey, we still have a lot of it, right? We have all the astrological signs. We are under this number or this animal or this creature or this thing or this stone, birthstone, and we're under all of these astrological things. We still have a lot of that experience all these years later. We're always looking for new signs and new opportunities. Some people report signs of maybe after their mother died or their father died, I saw a star falling. That is absolutely true. There are many people that have. An astrological phenomenon that helped and supported them. These three, it really seemed to help them. They said, hey, we've got to go. The appearance of the star or whatever it was in the astrological phenomenon, it was not surprising because there were many accounts of when something, some great phenomenon took place, the heavens proclaimed it. And for them, that was enough. And so they set off, and we've got to find out. The presence of the star was emblematic of the birth of the Christ in the world. There was never anything like it before. And so they take off on a journey. It says nothing about the star guiding them all the way along. In fact, it suggests that the star was not visible at times, which means they were traveling in the dark. They were making their way along. And that the sign just spoke of something really significant and unusual. We know that 2,000 years later to be the birth of the Christ in our world. Someone special had been born. And they had a quest. And they didn't make it up. It's a quest that is inside of the human spirit. I want to find and know him, the Christ. The one who was there in the beginning, the creator of it all. I have a desire. He created me with that, a desire to know him. So they're off on their journey. The next mention of the star is when they are heading out of Jerusalem and they are on the road to Bethlehem. And here's what it says. There in front of them was the star that they had seen at its rising. That excited them. It's always helpful to know that we are on the right track. But they journeyed a lot in darkness and worry and anxiety. Their journey was neither simple nor easy. They encountered difficulties and doubts. They came to Jerusalem, were lost. My God, we're on this journey. Now, what are we going to do? Do we turn back again? It was fraught with anxiety and worry. But they persevered in their quest, and they were finally rewarded and encountered the Christ. It's a great story. Not without great effort. This is why their story has such a relevance for us, of course, if we let it. We all start out on the road and the journey to life, and quite often we decide, hey, what I'm going to do. Not what he has in mind for me, but rather what I have in mind. Hey, I'm going to do this because these are my natural inclinations and my natural gifts, and so I'm going to become a lawyer. Yeah, I'm going to become a doctor. I'm going to become whatever. I'm going to choose my vocation. It's valuable to flip the question sometimes. Does he have a plan for me? It's a very clarifying question. This whole experience of living and being in life, does he have a purpose for me? Do I consult him, the one who created me? To have a unity between my purpose and his? They obviously had that sense, because it kept propelling them and moving them along. For us, we choose vocation, and then very much like them and their particular journey, hey, that dims after a while, right? Maybe marriage, you choose the spouse. Man, I'm married to the best person in the world. And then, hey, you have a little period of darkness, and you're thinking, oh, maybe he's not the Prince Charming or whatever, you know? Right? No? My Lord, hey, my vocation the same. I'm thinking, hey, 40 years ago, man, that was really cool, and all the things you're going to do. And then you go through that period of darkness and you're thinking, oh my Lord, I'm losing my faith. And a lot of people do think that. No, you're not losing your faith. You're simply going through another stage of growth, and it's kind of in the darkness. But that's where he reveals to us some of the greatest things. That's the story of the Christmas event. That's the story of the Magi. That's our story. In the real darkness, he reveals to us extraordinary things that we would never know and understand and appreciate. Check it in your own life. It's a truth. Because we would never know the value of life, of light, if it were not for darkness. The only reason we know light is because of darkness. We would never know it on its own. We only know it by comparison. It's a great truth in our lives. They had an ideal, and they were very persistent. They had an ideal. Nobody has the ideal vision. Nobody has the ideal hope. We all try to be in communion with him in finding that. But the initial star does dim. And it never remains in our sky just as it was back then. But that's quite all right, because we grow when we have to make our way through some of those difficulties and challenges. And for us to think of the Magi not having any troubles or difficulties would be to miss the whole point. The gospel is constant and consistent with the idea there will be challenges. You will have to take up the cross. And it's when we have to strap on the cross that we really find out what we're made of. Anybody can make it through the good times. It's when we encounter hardship and darkness and difficulty that we really find out about ourselves. We must not be surprised when it happens. The Magi were not surprised in any way, having to stop in Jerusalem, having to ask questions. How good are you at asking questions when you are lost or when you are struggling with issues of faith and understanding? That's a real test. If I think I know it all, that becomes one of the greatest obstacles. How often do I stop and ask for direction and try to get clarification about my journey, my experience? Who is the faithful friend that I speak to? about my journey? How do I know I am not going totally astray if I am not confiding and sharing and processing with somebody? It's a great story for them. They stop and they ask direction and they say, how do you know that? Tell us. It's written here. It's in the book. The amazing thing about our God is he revealed himself to the people of Israel through the scriptures. He revealed himself to everybody else through the natural event, his birth in the world. Scriptures back it up and support it. But to the rest of the world, to the Gentile world, he revealed himself in the coming of the Christ. That's a pretty powerful truth. He manifested himself in being born, one like us in all things but sin. To the Israelite people, the Hebrew people, he introduced himself through the promise of the scriptures. And then when it came right, he revealed himself to the Gentiles. That's what we celebrate in this feast. They are like us, the non-Jews, everybody else that was a non-Jew, making their way to find the Christ. That's what our journey is about. Finding the Christ. And they are a great example. Whenever we experience the darkness as they did, we've got to maintain a belief, this too will pass. We will come and we will see that light again, that light that we once saw. It's when we choose not to believe that, and that is a choice. When we choose not to believe that the light will come again, as sure as the darkness has been here, so the light will come. We must believe that the darkness will pass, and once again we will see the initial star that beckoned us and that invited us to follow the Christ to begin with. The Magi are great models for us. They were single-minded in their approach. They refused to be put off by difficulties and obstacles. Lord, have mercy. How easily we are put off by foolish, nonsensical obstacles. We create them, and then we stumble on them, and we wonder why. It's amazing. When they found the Christ, there was a great reward in the reality. When we find the Christ, there's an extraordinary truth in that reality. When they found the Christ, they came in, they worshipped him, and then they gave him gifts. When we find the Christ, what happens is it turns around. It's like Christmas. We don't give him gifts. He opens up gifts in us that we never even dreamt we had. Look at people who have encountered the Christ. Hallmark for them. Gifts that they had never shown before. Gifts that they had never manifested before begin to come forth in them. Why? Because they encounter the Christ. It's a great story. When we find the Christ and we offer him our love and our openness, and he opens up treasures within us that we never even dreamt we had. And then we become the ones offering gifts to our church, to our brothers and sisters, to our families. And there's a great little nuance in the story. It says, after they had completed all of this, they found the Christ, they brought their gifts, they worshipped him and celebrated, and now time to go home. They returned to their own country by another route. This suggests a different geographical approach, right? Hello? Yes, it suggests a different geographical approach. Truth is, it's so much more than that. It's not just a geographical approach. It is one of the great fundamental truths in our world. And that is, if you encounter Jesus Christ, you are never, ever going to keep living the same way. You're going to live life a totally different route. So as we encounter the Christ, that is the hallmark. Am I living differently? They went back to their own place by a new route because they had found the Christ. That's what we are about. That's why church exists, to help us to do that. If it's not helping us to do that, then we are not being effective. We have a great opportunity coming up for you. We are so excited about it. For the Lenten experience. And we are looking now for some of you leaders to step up. We have a little form here. We're going to have small groups. Everything we've done thus far, the past 4 years, has been in preparation for this, that we would ultimately form small faith groups in homes. In homes, not meeting here, or not meeting at the YMCA or anywhere else, meeting in homes. Why? That is the essential piece of it, because it's in homes that we experience the real hospitality and the connectedness, and that's where we really share the gospel. We learn it from the early church. It says in the Acts of the Apostles in chapter 2, verses 46 and 7, it says, "And all of the people went to the temple regularly and worshipped him, but they continued to meet daily in their homes, breaking the bread and sharing his word." We get away from that. We become too busy to do that. If we're too busy to do that, then we're probably not suited to this particular process. We have a great, great opportunity. We've studied it for a long time. This book has sold more than 32 million copies. He's a great Christian author. You've probably heard of him. Rick Warren. The Purpose-Driven Life, The Purpose-Driven Church, The Purpose-Driven Organization. Great teacher, instructor, and guide. Our plan is to have you create the small groups, 8 to 10 people. Today we are just looking for the leaders of groups. Who would be the leader, number one, and your assistant, your co-host or co-leader? And then you can fill out your own card. If you have 8 or 10 people already in mind and you want to approach them during the next week and say, "We are going to have a group in our home. We'd like to invite you to be a part of that group," then please go ahead and fill it out. If not, if you don't have 8 or 10 people, if you would like to be a leader, you can hold up your hand. If you would like to lead a group yourselves or in your own home, or please, the ushers will give you a card. Now, for those of you who do not wish to lead and who would like to be a part of a group, there will be an opportunity for you to sign up a little later, okay? Right now, we are looking at those who are willing to host and willing to choose individuals. If you manage to put 5 or 6 here on the group and you'd like to have 3 or 4 or 5 more, then you can let us know, right? The ideal group, it has been found, and it's through great study and reflection, ideal group is 10 to 12 people so that everybody has an opportunity to really engage and share faith and to just really have a sense of being involved. For us, perfect. Because for us as Catholics, we are a little different. We do not invite people to Eucharist. Why? Because we feel like, hey, they won't fit in, and all of this getting up and down and understanding Eucharist, it's a very hard concept to understand. It's a very advanced concept in faith, understanding Jesus Christ and the gift of Eucharist. And so it's not easy for us to invite people and say, "Well, come along and join us and trust and the Holy Spirit will do his part," and all of that. We just do not invite people because we think, well, they may not find it to be great, because oftentimes we don't find it to be great. But here's where you can invite them. The reason people have difficulty, if we bring people in from another denomination and say, "Come in and sit at our Eucharist," hey, they're going to be bored like a lot of us, you know? Really, be honest. Until we push it along further up the field. But we can invite people into this, into our group. You can go in your neighborhood and say, "You know some Catholics that are falling away in your neighborhood? You want to say to them, hey, we're going to have a study in our home for 6 weeks of Lent. The question is, what on earth am I here for?" And we're going to give you a book, and the text has a little chapter for every day. It's got 42 chapters. One for every day of Lent, and you'll be able to watch a little video on the side as well that gives an introduction to each of those chapters. And there's some great chapters. Chapters like, you know, how do we really serve God? Chapters like the envy trap. You ever had trouble with that? No? Man, I sure have. Man, that envy thing, you know? The trap. Many other things about relationships, you know, about growing with Him. Great, great instruction. And then an opportunity to really study, how is He speaking to us? He has manifested Himself to us in the natural by being born in our world. But how does He confirm us in faith through His Word? I think there will be young adult groups meeting as well, right? So I hear, our director, and so those of you that are young adults, you can speak to us and speak with Lexi about some of those groups. Many different expressions of groups, but it's all about sharing faith and growing in Him. So we are excited about this opportunity. We've been bringing it to fruition for 4 years. We sent two people away for mega training on this and on the materials and the book. Sarah O'Donnell and Cecilia went representing us at very extensive training. So we know we are ripe and that the Lord has brought us to this particular point in our journey of faith as a family. And this is just a wonderful match. Every day during Lent, it's very ambitious, but every day during Lent you will have a little chapter, a little reflection, and then once a week you will have your group sharing and Bible study and process in the homes with somebody else. Anything else that we need to? If you have further questions, you can ask us about it, and we'll continue to reveal more and more as we rock along. Remember those five words? Oh, hey, remember fellowship, discipleship, ministry, evangelization, and worship. You'll know and learn a whole lot about the five of those through this process. Let me just mention one, evangelization. This is a powerful opportunity to evangelize. For us as Catholics, a question or an issue that I hear so often from families is, hey, I'm so disappointed or sorry that our children have left the practice of the faith. Happens a lot. Here's a great opportunity to invite your children, neighbors, other friends. We're not proselytizing. We're not asking them to be Catholic. We're asking them, how would you like to come to my home? We're going to have a wonderful little celebration for 6 weeks. We're going to reflect on the question, what on earth am I here for? Invite them to be a part of it, your neighbors, your friends. That's evangelization. We've got something really valuable and good to offer you. Would you like to join us?